A look at the latest cover story in the New Republic of interest here in Wisconsin. The article is titled, The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker.
In the article, the author gives us a history of Scott Walker's political career. He also goes back in time to get at the root of Milwaukee's racial and political divisions.
Alec McGillis is with us. He's a senior editor at the New Republic and the author of the piece. We did reach out to Scott Walker for this interview. He wasn't available to join us on short notice. Alec, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start out with the title, The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker, A Journey Through the Poisonous, Racially Divided World That Produced a Republican Star. Them's fighting words, in a way. Does this article just provoke some of the polarization that you're writing about?
The headline's definitely a little bit edgy, and the New Republic is known for edgy headlines. While I did not write the headline, I do think that the piece backs up the basic thesis, which is that to describe the world that Governor Walker comes out of politically and to make the case that this world has made him possibly not the best candidate for the Republicans in 2016, if they're looking for someone to broaden their party's appeal beyond the relatively narrow one that they're the sort of box that they're in now, that you might want to have someone who's not come up in this kind of bubble that Governor Walker has in these very, very, with this base of support in the Milwaukee suburbs that is just incredibly monolithic and remarkably homogenous. And that just isn't perhaps not the best sort of landscape in which environment in which to develop as a national candidate.
We'll dig into that landscape a little more, but on the face of it, especially for people looking from around the country, that might seem counterintuitive. They might say, here's a Republican governor who's won, in effect, two statewide elections in a place that went twice for Barack Obama, who was re-elected and re-elected as Milwaukee County executive three times there in an urban environment. He's a guy who can win in places that Republicans won't necessarily win in.
Right. You know, that's exactly the case that is made for him as someone who could sort of reach swing voters and win in a purple kind of place. The piece makes the argument that in the state elections that what you were seeing there was not so much someone winning over swing voters in a purple state, but winning on the basis of this incredibly strong, again, monolithic base of support that comes out at levels of turnout that are just astonishing. I mean, nationally top-ranked levels of turnout. And of course, has run his governor's races and the recall in a midterm off-cycle environment when you don't have the presidential turnout, whereas Wisconsin in presidential years has gone, of course, Democratic for seven straight years. What I wish, trying to explain to readers that really is the secret of his success in Wisconsin, he himself admitted in that terrific recent series in the Journal Sentinel about polarization in Milwaukee, in Metro Milwaukee, that there's really no persuasion going on anymore in Metro Milwaukee, that he himself is just relying on base turnout in the WOW counties. As far as the county, his success as county executive, this is something I wish that I had addressed in the piece. It was cut for space, but the important thing to keep in mind there is, yes, of course, he did win three times as county executive in a blue county. The key factor there to keep in mind is, of course, that the county elections, municipal elections in Milwaukee County are held in the spring, which is, again, a circumstance that tends to produce lower turnout and less of a, frankly, less of an urban turnout. And so that definitely worked to his advantage there. The other thing to keep in mind with his success as Milwaukee County executive is that as soon as he ran for governor in 2010, there was some speculation that he might do pretty well in Milwaukee County because he, of course, had lived there and been the executive there. Well, in fact, he did no better than Tom Barrett in 2010 in Milwaukee County compared with previous Republicans. Again, his base was in the WOW counties, this amazing blood red base, which is simply unlike any base, any suburban voting patterns that you see in other northern cities. That's what's so striking about Milwaukee, and I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, that you have most other northern cities, their suburbs have gotten more diverse, gotten more politically purple. In Milwaukee, it's the opposite. The suburbs have gotten redder and redder in the WOW counties. It's just really quite remarkable.
That part isn't news exactly in Wisconsin, that Milwaukee County is a blue county. The three neighboring counties are red counties, and we really watch those closely on Election Day. But looking at it from the outside, how unique is that? You mentioned among northern cities, are we really an anomaly throughout the country?
Yes, you're a tremendous anomaly. It's just looking at it in a comparative way, it's striking, and it's really kind of a mystery to a lot of political scientists and political demographers. The Journal Sentinel series did everyone the service of showing maps of other northern cities, Chicago, Detroit, Minneapolis, Cleveland, and showing just how different the voting patterns are there. Whereas in Milwaukee, you have this very, very stark deep blue, deep red split between the city and the WOW counties. In these other cities, you have a much more, even Detroit, you have a much more kind of modeled fade swing areas sort of out spreading out from the cities. There's just much more diversity and heterogeneity of political sentiment in those cities. And that has partly to do with this, the fact that the suburbs in those other cities have simply gotten more diverse. In the WOW counties, you have these counties that are still less than 2% African American. I mean, that's just nothing. Even in Detroit, the suburbs there, Macomb and Oakland County are getting more diverse. Chicago, they're getting more diverse. It's really quite an anomaly. Some political scientists told me you have to look all the way to the southern cities of Atlanta and Birmingham to find suburbs that are as deep, deep red as what you have in Milwaukee.
So how does that affect, as you see it, Governor Walker's campaign strategy as a statewide politician before we get to the national level?
Right. Well, what I posit in the piece is that it's that he's come up in this realm where he's been able to rely on this incredibly strong base, and that just has put him in a kind of bubble or a kind of cocoon, which where it's his policies and just his whole sort of outlook has been much more about that base and fulfilling its demands and desires than about positioning himself to appeal more to swing voters, like you're seeing with some other. If you look at how the other Midwestern governors who came in at the same time as him in 2010, they really have taken a different approach. Governor Snyder in Michigan and Governor Kasich in Ohio, and because they're more attuned to what they see as the demands of the sort of swing voter in their state, where, again, Governor Walker has said himself that there's just not a whole lot of persuasion for him going on anymore. The other element of that bubble, which I talk a lot about in the piece, is talk radio. And this is another thing that's just really quite anomalous in Metro Milwaukee. It is very unusual for a mid-sized city to have so many very popular, very influential, very long-time local conservative talk radio hosts. You have, of course, the national talk radio guys everywhere, you know, Rush and those guys. But to have local guys who've been around for 20-plus years, like Charlie Sykes and Mark Belling, who are weighing in on local issues and are very informed on local issues and influencing matters at the local level, you know, pressuring state legislators on various amendments and various votes, weighing in in primaries the way they did with Scott Walker and Mark Newman. This is really unusual, and it's, again, just part of this landscape that I think has really helped shape Governor Walker, who is so good at working those radio personalities. And my piece gets into just how early on he started making inroads with them and building relationships with them.
But we see all over the country increasing polarization, including a new Pew study that shows a more polarized landscape, less cooperation in politics, less reaching across the aisle, less effort to persuade the other side, more effort to rally the base. Doesn't Governor Walker, as you portray this story, fit really well into that national landscape?
He does. You know, it's interesting. I think in some ways, Metro Milwaukee is in some ways ahead of the curve, but also behind the curve. It's ahead of the curve because it's gotten so polarized. And yes, the rest of the country is also getting more polarized, both in just in the politics in Washington, but also in just the way we live. We tend much more to live around people like us politically. So in that sense, Wisconsin, Metro Milwaukee are ahead of the curve. But as I explained in the piece, they're ahead of the curve in part because they're behind the curve. The argument I make about why Metro Milwaukee is so segregated and polarized is actually that it's in a kind of time warp, that because the Great Migration came late to Milwaukee, which it did, it's pretty striking that in 1970, Milwaukee had the smallest black population percentage-wise of any of the largest 15 cities in the country. The migration just of African Americans from the South just didn't arrive in the first couple waves the way it did in Chicago and Detroit and other cities. So the African Americans came to Milwaukee in great numbers later. It was more 60s, 70s, and even 80s that you saw the movement to Milwaukee. And because of that delayed arrival, everything else was delayed. The suburban flight that you saw everywhere around the country happened later in Milwaukee. And then at the same time, of course, because the arrival was late, there was less time for sort of a African-American middle-class leadership elite to develop in Milwaukee before the whole jobs bottom just fell out of the manufacturing base. So you have this situation where it's almost like Milwaukee, Metro Milwaukee, is caught in sort of like where other cities were in the 1980s, where you had this just real the movement to the suburbs has been relatively recent. There's still this real tension between the cities and the suburbs. The suburbs haven't gotten diverse yet. Folks in the suburbs look at the city as this pretty sort of scary, dysfunctional place. There's a lot more talk about urban crime than you see elsewhere, and it's really is kind of a time warp. In some ways, I think Metro Milwaukee might actually, over time, become less polarized. As you see more minorities moving out to the suburbs, you might see the suburbs start to get a little more purple. But right now, it is in this kind of time warp, which again puts it kind of almost ahead of the other country in its polarization.
We're talking to Alec MacGillis about his cover story for the New Republic. It's called The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker. And we want to hear from you. What is your reaction to this story, if you've checked it out already, or if you're just now hearing about it? Do you think Governor Scott Walker will run for president in 2016? Do you think his experience in Wisconsin will help him or hurt him if he does so? Call in and let us know what you think at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. We're continuing our conversation with Alec MacGillis of The New Republic about his cover story, The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this story if you've read it? What do you make of political divisions in and around Milwaukee and how they affect statewide politics? Do you think the governor will run for president in 2016? Will his experience in Wisconsin help him or hurt him? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll get your calls in just a moment. But, Alec, a lot of the reaction from the governor's supporters looking at the headline of this piece, the case made throughout, is, hey, you are trying to call Governor Walker a racist, or at least taint him with the racist label, him and his supporters, especially in the counties, the metropolitan counties around Milwaukee. Is that what you're doing?
No, most certainly not. I think that the piece makes clear that nowhere in the piece is there any accusation of Governor Walker himself being racist or having done anything explicitly racist. What the piece tries to argue is that he comes out of a world, that a political world and a realm that does have a fair amount of toxic stuff floating around in it. Some of the things that, you know, I describe, Mark Belling and Charlie Sykes talking about and dwelling on a lot, just has a definitely racially charged component when they're talking about Milwaukee issues, Milwaukee dysfunction. You've also seen some of these things coming out of Governor Walker's office, a lot of these emails and social media postings that are pretty ugly. Again, this is not Governor Walker himself, but there's just a lot of unpleasantness floating around, and a certain view of things as regards Milwaukee and the African Americans living in Milwaukee, and I do believe that environment cannot help but sort of have an effect on people who come out of it.
But couldn't you say that it's not the racial divisions that are driving the support for Governor Walker, but you've got a lot of people in an economically similar area? Maybe they support his Republican policies on taxes, government spending, public employees, that sort of thing.
Oh, no doubt. He has an appeal, and he's been very good at making the case for his agenda with his base. The argument of the piece is that his success, though, has relied so much on this base in the Wow counties that is unlike really almost anything else in the country. I mean, this is an incredibly monolithic base. To have a region like this where you have 80% turnout, 80% voting for him in some communities in both 2010 and then the recall. It's just really quite extraordinary. And we won't know until he runs, if he runs in 2016, how he would fare with a more diverse, both ideologically and sort of ethnically diverse kind of electorate. But it is just a very unusual environment to have come up in, and that's what the piece is trying to convey, this universe that has produced him.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Mike on the line in Madison. Mike, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. I'd like to make a comment on specifically how the Scott Walker campaign specifically targeted conservative white males statewide in relation to the gun issue. Now, there was signage all over the state that said, Tom Barrett's going to take away your hunting rifles. And I saw these signs. I've traveled the state a lot, and there was huge signage everywhere across the state. Now, Tom Barrett, being from Milwaukee, has a huge, huge gun violence issue, and obviously they need to do something about it within the city limits. And so they used that against him, trying to say that he would take away the rights of gun owners statewide, whereas anybody running for governorship in Wisconsin would know better than to even mess with the firearms rights of hunters. And once again, the Scott Walker campaign completely manipulated that and tried to make it seem as if they were going to take away guns from the entire statewide, when the real issue was how to control guns in the urban Milwaukee area. But this is a prime example of kind of what you're talking about, being too white. That was primarily designed to elicit a response from conservative white rural folks who don't understand the insane crime rate and gun deaths that are happening in the Milwaukee area.
Gotcha, Mike. Thanks for the call. Alec, what do you think of that as a campaign tactic that that Mike's talking about, and how could that translate to a national election?
Well, it's a good example to raise, and that's, of course, it's a general argument that Republicans elsewhere have made against Democratic candidates, of course, with some success in certain places. What I would just note as an aside to that is that it's one thing that's striking about Wisconsin politics is that you actually – rural voters are not as monolithically Republican in Wisconsin as elsewhere, and it's another unusual thing about Wisconsin that you have – in Wisconsin, the reddest place is really the Wow counties, the suburbs of the big city. In most states, the reddest place are the rural areas, the sparsely settled outlying areas. Wisconsin, it's not the case. You look at the map, pick your year, and there are pockets of blue around rural small town Wisconsin. But instead, you've got this in Wisconsin. It's these suburbs. There's just really nothing like them in the country.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We'll go to Nick with us now in Greenfield. Nick, hi.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my call, and hello, Mr. McGinnis. What I have to say is that Scott Walker and his Republican legislature passed laws reducing the days and times for voting to cut back the number of citizens that are able to vote in Milwaukee County. He wants to stack the deck in favor of those surrounding red counties. And as far as the racial component, Scott Walker may not be overtly racist, but what he did in his kind of backdoor way was severely curtail public transit in the city, which hurt the inner city citizens. So that's what I've got to say. And Mr. McGinnis, what's the name of your paper?
It's the New Republic. Alec, what do you have to say about what Nick brought up there on voter ID, voting law restrictions?
It's very important, and I mentioned this pretty centrally in my piece. I mean, I think this issue is just basically the clearest example of an actual policy that has been directed from Governor Walker and the Republican legislature to literally suppress Milwaukee and its residents. I mean, there's just you have this environment where turnout is everything. Turnout has become everything in Southeast Wisconsin. It's all about who gets their base out in the elections. And to the extent that you can, even just at the margins, lower the amount of turnout in Milwaukee, voters who rely on early voting to vote in the days before the election because they can't get to the polls in the election because the lines are long on election day, because you just have a lot more people voting in a densely settled city – are now going to have a tougher time getting to the polls. And there's just no other way to look at that decision to cut back on those hours. The voter ID bill, of course, has been struck down by the judge, but the early voting cutbacks stand, and they're that's going to have an impact. And the motivation there it's not hard to see what it is.
You've painted Scott Walker's background in Wisconsin as ultimately a liability. You say he over-relies on a very devoted base in a unique series of mainly three counties surrounding Milwaukee County. But you also point towards some strengths, a very message-disciplined politician, somebody who does a good job working with conservative media to reach out to the base, somebody who brings the base to the polls. Isn't that something that could serve him well in a Republican primary for president and in a general election?
He has definite strengths. He checks all the boxes for the Republican coalition. He's an evangelical Christian, which makes him more than acceptable to religious Republican voters. He is very strong on taxes and welfare and unions. Just really satisfies that sort of that part of the coalition, and he's presumably pretty strong on national security stuff. So and then at the same time the other strength is that he's able to bridge that gap between the Tea Party and the Republican establishment. He's very popular with Tea Party Republicans because of the way he took on the unions, but at the same time he doesn't come across as somehow a fringe person. He's also acceptable to many establishment Republicans. So I would argue that he would actually be probably pretty good in the primaries. In the general election, that's where things would get tougher. The one thing I would say to his appeal, though, even in the primaries, he's not the most electrifying speaker, and I think that could be his biggest hindrance in the primaries, even with sort of base voters around the country. He's pretty sort of flat on the stump, not all that charismatic, although I think some people say he's gotten better in that regard. I think that could be his main hindrance in the primaries.
Some of his supporters in the state have said, hey, this piece you wrote, Alec, it's a political hit piece trying to derail a potentially strong Republican, candidate for governor, first of all, potentially candidate for president. How do you respond?
Well, I would respond that I'll speak a little bit to the sort of derivation of this piece. We just thought it was time to do a good profile of Governor Walker. There's been a lot of stuff written about Act 10 and the protests and the recall, but in the national press there haven't been that many in-depth profiles of Governor Walker. So we thought it was a good time to sort of do that and introduce him to people who don't know that much about him. But I took it as an excuse really to write about something that I've been intrigued about for a while, which is this polarization and segregation in Metro Milwaukee. I've known a little bit about it for a while, and I've always been fascinated by it and also kind of depressed by it. I mean, it's not a nice thing, but I just wanted to learn more about it. And the more I got looked into it with the help of that incredible series in the Journal Sentinel, and which had those just amazing maps and data on just how stark the divides had gotten, I just thought, this is a way to introduce people to this part of the country and these really quite unusual dynamics that are going on here.
Alec, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Alec McGillis, senior editor at The New Republic and author of the piece, The Unelectable Whiteness of Scott Walker. It's this issue's cover story. You can find a link to that on the Central Time Facebook page and keep up the conversation over there.